Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. I'm the founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. And we're located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94, between Highway 164 and Highway F. We're at the Ridgeview Corporate Park. We're also in the village of Whitefish Bay. We're in the Equitable Bank building. Everyone knows where Winkies is, so we're right across from Winkies. And we also can service our clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. So if you'd like to put a face with a voice, you could go to ellenbecker.com for more details. My guest today is Asia Evans, and she's a financial therapist. Who has ever heard of a financial therapist? And I was very fortunate enough to receive her book, and I dug into it, and I just was telling my group here that it's a great book that we should have on hand to give to any of our clients who are kind of struggling with where they're at. But you know, Asia, more importantly, we work with all of our clients' children. Mm-hmm. And you know, as they graduate from college, as they're going off to college, this is just an absolutely great book to give as a Christmas gift. It's a great book for your kids that are entering school and they're trying to figure out how does this all work. And, you know, we always didn't have that. And even my own children that I kind of launched out, they came back and said, "Mom, I didn't know this. I didn't know this." And so there's just things that we don't always know. We take them for granted that we understand them, but we don't. And so, Asia, welcome to Money Sense. I'm so glad that you could meet with us right before Christmas. It's a little bit big for a stocking stuffer, but it is a good book to share. And so I just would like you to, first of all, tell our listeners what a financial therapist is. But even before that, like, how did you get involved in this and what kind of tweaked your interest that there was a need?
Sure. So thank you so much for having me first. It's such a pleasure to talk to people who really understand how difficult this can be for people. And what I really try to hammer home is that it really doesn't matter how much money you have. It's all about like how you feel about money, how you believe, your belief systems around money. So that comes up a lot for people. And it doesn't matter what your income looks like. It doesn't matter if you have debt. It doesn't matter if you're struggling financially or doing really great. It's just important for you to understand that you have beliefs about money that were probably passed down to you, and you are passing that down to your children. So having some of these conversations is going to be really, really important, especially when you are, you know, launching your young adults out there into the world and they're going out to, you know, make their own money and handle their own money on a more full-time basis. So it is really important. I'm glad you brought up that like age group, because I think people don't always think about like, hey, how does my 19-year-old think about money? Not so much how they navigate money, but how do they think about it? And how does that impact their, you know, financial behavior? So for me, all of this started probably about 10 years ago when I went through my own financial awakening. So both of my parents are from New York City. I grew up in upstate New York and then moved down to New York for college, went away to a bigger city, a big city in Boston for grad school, and then came back and started working. And what was coming up for me is that I understood money, but I didn't understand like why I was doing certain things. Like, why am I saving? I know I should save, but why am I saving? Why are you putting in for retirement? What is a match? Why is it important? And what I found is that I felt like I was making more money than I ever made before, but I was confused why I wasn't further along down the road of where I thought I should be. How come my credit cards weren't just being paid off when I was paying the minimums every month? How come I wasn't seeing my savings account grow if I was kind of still dipping into it to do fun things with my friends or travel or whatnot? So that really led me on this path of trying to understand personal finance a little bit more. And at the time, a lot of my friends around me had been in the working force longer than I had, because I had to go to grad school for my counseling psychology master's degree. And I was like, I cannot keep up. Like, I cannot financially do the same things that they're doing. And I felt bad about it. I felt bad that I couldn't go to dinner and just split the bill without saying to somebody, but like, guys, I only got chicken nuggets. Like, I only got French fries or a soda. I wasn't drinking, or those kinds of what can feel like really awkward conversations. And as I was talking about, you know, my learnings with my clients who might bring up money, I realized I was not the only one going through some emotional feelings or just feeling uncomfortable or feeling less than here and there, worrying about my self-esteem when it came to money. And that's what really led me to dive into the world of financial therapy and really get involved with organizations who are doing this work, because money is emotional, but we have really been taught that it isn't and that it's only about the numbers, where I can't think of anything more emotional than, can you provide for your family? What do you want your, how do you want to like help provide for your, the next generation, whether that's grandkids or your children? Do you want to, you know, pay for their college or give them, help them with a down payment for a starter home? That's very emotional. It's very important. And it also lends itself to how do you kind of put some financial backing behind your own values? So that's kind of what led me to this work. My own experience of like just feeling bad and then realizing that it was coming into the therapy space a lot more with my clients.
You know, Asia, I did mention earlier that this is such a good book for kids going into college, graduating, going out to their life. And I really appreciated your story that you put in the book. But I have to tell you, at my age, it's sometimes I end up at a out to dinner with a group of people. And often there's someone that isn't as financially able to split the bill or pay the bill, or and sometimes I don't know who they are and I don't know, but somebody has ordered something very expensive or has had a few drinks. I think that that's a question that we all struggle with. What do you do when you're at a group of people and it's maybe a holiday party and some people are drinking and you start to have appetizers and all of a sudden it's like, what do you do with the bill? How do you do this? How do you navigate it? Mm-hmm. And it's not even always that. In some cases I think, well, I could just pay the bill, but then I know that people would feel bad that you do that. You don't want to minimize somebody else. So why don't we just start there? Because that's where you start in your book.
Yeah. Listen, who is paying for what is always a complex topic, because money can be really awkward for people to talk about. We all have to navigate it, but we don't want to bring it up as directly as sometimes we need to. And when you are sitting at that dinner and you're celebrating, you're ordering apps and people are ordering drinks and other people are like, I'm getting a dessert, but I'm not getting a dessert. You know, like you can go anywhere on the menu from a salad all the way up to, you know, a huge steak, which is amazing. But what puts people in the awkward conversation is that you haven't navigated how you're paying for it. And I always promote having these tough conversations. So before you even go to dinner, I would say, depending upon the group or the size, ask people, hey, what's your budget? Do we want to stay in between, you know, $25 to $50 a person? Or are we really going to go to a really nice restaurant where it might be hundreds of dollars per person? Like, decide what feels comfortable for the whole group before you even get to the restaurant, before you go out. When you're just picking the restaurant, I would say that's a great time. And then after you guys decide, hey, this is where we're going to go, this is where we're going to eat, just have a quick conversation. Hey, how do we want to deal with the bill? Is the restaurant going to be okay with separate checks? Can we do that? I'm in New York City and restaurants do not love it when we ask for separate checks, especially in like big parties. It is not a thing that people want to do, and you feel bad for the serving staff, even though they could, they don't really like to do that. But if you're in a place that are comfortable doing that, let them know when you come. You sit down, everyone's excited. Hey, we're going to do separate checks. Or, okay, everybody, let's pool the money and decide, like, everybody put in your $25, $50. Okay, that's how we're going to split the bill. Great. Like, this is how we're going to do it. So have the conversation. However you decide, like, itemize it for each of you, or decide, like, oh, we're all comfortable splitting the bill down the middle, each person pays a portion, then that's fine. But make sure you have decided before you're caught up in the moment of having drinks and food and laughter and having a great time.
I think one of the things that have changed for me a lot is that currently right now, there's a lot of people who just aren't drinking.
Yeah.
And they don't drink. And, you know, a cocktail could be $20 or something.
Exactly.
Adds up really quickly. And so I think that's a really important to address those, how do we want to do the bill right up front?
Yeah, because it can get really awkward and nobody wants to put a damper on the time. And I think that that's also a misconception that the second you start talking about money, it has to be uncomfortable. It doesn't have to be uncomfortable if you're just having open conversations. We all have to navigate money in some way, shape, or form. We have to pay for things. And that is not an individual experience, right? We're all doing it. So let's just name it and say it out loud so we can move on and have a great time.
My guest today is Asia Evans. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back. She has written a book, Feel Good Finance. She's a financial therapist and we've got lots of questions to talk about. But before we end this segment, I also want to identify that I have a lot of adults that come in and they've been married 30 years and they still haven't had those conversations.
100%.
And I had a client, this is many years ago, but it still tickles my fancy when I think about it, because we sat down and we were talking about, you know, I always like to think when we sit down for the first time, we talk about it in the sense of if you go to the mall for the first time, it says you are here. And so we kind of like, you are here. Where are you at? Yep. We've talked about it. And he said, well, we absolutely have to start saving more money. And my wife doesn't save. And she looked at him and she said, I save all the time. I cut out coupons. And in her mind, she was saving. In his mind, he wanted to see the bank account grow.
Yes. And he's looking and so, for the number.
Mm-hmm. The number. So we'll start there when we get back about how to communicate around money. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, the founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. And as we go into this holiday season, this is getting me pretty close to being on the radio for 28 years. And in all these years, 28 years, we've never sold an investment product on the air. It's always been about education so our clients and our listeners can make the best decisions around the money that they have. And when I came across this book, Feel Good Finance, and it's Untangle Your Relationship with Money for Better Mental, Emotional, and Financial Well-Being, and I've now had the opportunity to meet Asia Evans, who is a financial therapist, it really makes such good sense. And I want to just say the holidays are right around the corner, and this is a great book to give your kids and for you to read. And you know what? I find that people have difficulties in bringing up conversations. It's sometimes the elephant in the room. This book is actually a very simple, easy way because there's some really funny stories in it, and I can relate to it. It made me smile. And it's sometimes we need that crack to open up a conversation. So, Asia, you know, it's that just having people having conversations and talking about money can be really difficult because we sort of assume that at a certain point we all know, but we really don't.
No, not at all. And I think what happens is that sometimes we don't even know where our own soft spots are. Sometimes we don't even know how the things that we have lived through have really impacted what we do with our money. And that's what I was really trying to help my readers uncover in the book. I wanted people to go to those places that they don't really talk about or try to either push away or bury and hope don't come up, to really ask yourself, hey, why does this feel so hard for me sometimes? Why don't I communicate with my partner about money? Why do I feel so uncomfortable about money? Why do I feel like I'm never going to have enough money saved, or I'm never going to get out of debt, or how do I make so much money and I feel like I have nothing to show for it? All these questions that in some point of our lives, we've all asked ourselves money questions. It's impossible not to. So I wanted people to really get honest about what was going on for them and then how is it showing up with their financial behaviors. And sometimes talking about it can be so complicated that having a book where you can kind of reflect on your own and then eventually hopefully bring it up with your partner to say, or friends or family, anybody, honestly, to just like, hey, have you thought about this? What are you doing? What systems are you guys using in your life to manage your money? Or what are your financial goals? How do you truly become financially well? So that's really what I was kind of, you know, pushing my readers in the audience to start asking themselves so they can feel better about their money.
Well, I think too that sometimes it's just like going to the doctor. We aren't feeling good or something. We just don't want to know. And yeah. I think as a gift or a way of talking to one of your children who are getting married, that to have these conversations up front, because I think a lot of divorces are prompted by disagreements over money and not understanding money. So it's really a positive, proactive way of understanding what's important to you. And maybe if you can't talk about money and have those tough conversations, maybe you aren't in the right relationship, I would say, or in the right yeah. place at that moment. Maybe right. there needs to be some more work done before you decide to bind your lives together.
I could not agree more and completely really want people to understand the gravity of this, because to your point, money is one of the top reasons why marriages do not work out. This is one of the top stressors for Americans, money, and how do we talk about it? So yes, if you are somebody who has been married for 30 years, if you're somebody who's been married for 10 years, if you're somebody who is about to get engaged, please have these conversations about finances. And what comes up is that it can be really difficult to be vulnerable. It can be really difficult to share, like I said, the softer spots that you have experienced in your life, or just share like, I don't know. And do I need to know? And what do you think? Having those vulnerable conversations is what is going to not only fortify your marriage and your relationship, but it's also going to make sure that both parties in the relationship feel comfortable with what's going on with the money. I don't want anybody sticking your head in the sand and pretending it's all going to be okay because the other partner is handling it. No. That is not going to be good for anybody. Even if you are not the person managing the money, you two can still have a conversation about the money. Hey, where is the money? What accounts are they in? What are our financial goals? What do we want to accomplish this year? What feels really important? So like you said, with the example, the one partner was like, hey, we need to save more money. And she's like, yeah, I am saving money. Like I'm cutting the coupons. And he's like, oh gosh, right? He wanted to actually see more money put into account saving and why that might be important for him. And what I have found when I work with couples is that really a lot of times people just want to feel like they're safe. Money can give you a sense of stability and safety, knowing that you can afford to pay your rent, pay your mortgage, take care of your family, take care of each other, that you'll be okay after retirement because you have enough money. We do need money. So having these conversations around, hey, what does it look like for us to be financially secure and financially stable are very, very important conversations to have, just in case something happens to one partner or the other. Nobody wants to be scrambling in a time of hardship to understand where the money is or how to access it. That's very scary.
Or to feel like a turtle on their back.
Yeah, exactly.
Not knowing who to trust, not knowing who to help out. You know, it's interesting that you're bringing up this type of a conversation, because one of the things that I notice, Asia, with my clients is that when you're talking about this younger family or younger people who have children, they're trying to figure out how to save. They're trying to figure out what the future looks like. Do you know what I notice is when my clients get beyond that and they're maybe in their 60s, they're still struggling and in fear about not having enough money to pay bills, and they could have $1 million or $8 million. And 100%. they don't realize that they've left go of that, and they can now live a life of without that stress of not having enough. And I even will say to them, you know, I tease them, you have more than enough money. You can go and enjoy life. You can be philanthropic. You can do a lot of things. And one man once said to me, he said, Karen, I came home and I found my parents packing boxes and we were out of the house because we didn't have enough money to pay rent. And he said, I never want to be in that place again. And I didn't know if it was my fault. I didn't know if I had done something. And he was carrying all this fear about not having enough, where he had more than enough. And even though he had enough, he wasn't enjoying life. He was still living a life of scarcity rather than abundance. And I will tell you that this happens all the time in working with clients. And they can't enjoy what they've saved so long for. And they don't even meet their dreams because they're afraid.
Yeah. And they worked so hard to get there. And this is, I feel like, is kind of an untapped population when we start having these kinds of conversations, because a lot of times we are talking about, hey, are you going to have enough money for retirement? Make sure you have a savings fund or an emergency fund. It tends to skew younger, right? Like a lot of my clients, I would say I'm working with are probably between the ages of 25 and 45. So very different places in their life, but there is a population going into retirement, I will say, like newly retired or going into it, that is a very, very important, because this is exactly what I see. I literally just dedicated one of my books, wrote a little, you know, a message to him, and one of my friend's dads who has spent his life making sure that he had enough money to save and is now a little worried and anxious about, oh gosh, am I going to have enough, and isn't doing all of the amazing things that he has worked so hard to be able to do. And I think that that is just terrible. I don't want that for anybody. You worked hard, you squirreled away your retirement. It's here. Enjoy the money. You have more money than you can spend in lifetimes. You're not going to go buy some island, right? Like you're not going to do anything wild, but yeah, you can learn to spend your money and enjoy it. And I think as much as we say that people need to learn how to save their money, they also need to be taught how to spend their money and to enjoy it. But to your point, when you've lived through something that is financially traumatic, it can be really hard for you to feel like you spending your money is not going to put you in jeopardy of loss. And that's what it sounds like your client is living through, going through not knowing, not being kind of like thrown off your game, realizing, oh, we're not okay. I want to make sure this never happens to me. And at this point, like you said, and I'm talking millions of dollars, right? Like people who have saved and invested for decades and have the millions of dollars, but still don't know how to spend it. That is so, so heartbreaking to me, because you earned it. And this is your time to like put your feet up and go out to that trip of Napa you always wanted to go to. Go to Italy, go wherever you want, enjoy it and spend time with your family. But it can be really hard because of things that people have gone through to not hoard their money and feel like it's okay to spend it and that you can still be safe even when you do spend it.
It's sort of knowing when enough is enough.
Yeah, you did it.
You know, I'll quickly, because we're just going to take a break, but just quickly, my uncle who has passed away and my aunt, they both worked in factories and they saved a lot because they didn't have children. And they were very generous to me and nieces and nephews. But my uncle decided that for him, retirement meant that he was going to buy a Cadillac and he was going to go to Florida. And so he did it. But when they got to Florida, he used to pull the shades down every day. The sun never came in because he didn't want too big a bill on his air conditioning. And he invested in stocks. And they literally lived on my uncle's salary and invested my aunt's. And he had all these stocks that paid dividends. And when I started taking care of them as he was aging, I convinced him to give me all of his stocks that he had, and I would put them in-house so that it was easier to manage. And I literally went to the bank with him, and he had two safety deposit boxes full of stock certificates, because every time they split off, he got more stock certificates. And so I did convince him to give them to me. I brought them back and I entered them into his account. And about a month later, he called and he said, I want all my stock certificates back. I want them back. I want my stocks back. And so I brought him 12 certificates that wouldn't even fill up one safety deposit box. And he was heartbroken because that's how he saw his wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he had all of these, enough money to do everything, certainly to pay the air conditioning bill, they still cut coupons. They never, ever enjoyed their money. And when they died, it was passed to all the nieces and nephews. And we, of course, enjoyed it. And I used it for my business. But they never, ever really enjoyed it. And I see that we think of it comes because they went through the depression. But it's not just the depression. It's a mindset that a
yes.
lot of people have that they don't know when enough is enough. And they don't give themselves permission to enjoy what they've earned. So my guest today, we're going to come back to that. Don't lose the thought, is Asia Evans. She wrote a great book, Feel Good Finance, and it's really about your relationship with money. And I know that it sounds crazy, but it truly, truly does make a difference. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. My guest today is Asia Evans. She wrote a great book. If you're looking for an extra little Christmas gift, you can go into all the major areas to buy books, Amazon and whatnot. Feel Good Finance by Asia Evans. And in addition to that, she wrote the book because she herself experienced some of the hurdles around getting a good job, getting out of college and thinking that I've got some money, can play around a little bit. And all of a sudden the bills started building up and she started eating appetizers instead of dinners. And I mean, it's so real. It is so absolutely perfect and real. And so, as I said, the book is Feel Good Finance. I ended up just talking about my aunt and uncle. My aunt had to have $50,000 in her checking account at all times, and she never, ever, ever spent it. Mm-hmm. So how do people start out with thinking about your children and wanting to make them financially astute adults? How do you, as the person who's out there trying to make their own way, what are the conversations? What is the head talk that people need to have to let go of the fears and the, you know, how do they do it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it really is one, like when we're talking about, you know, launching your kids into the world, it has to be talking about money just in general. You have to just talk about money. They need to know that these are not secretive conversations that nobody can have. They can be private conversations, but it doesn't have to be a secret. Money is not secret. We all know we all have to navigate it in some way, shape, or form. We just don't, we may not know where it's coming from, but it's not a secret that people have to have it to use in their everyday lives. So it's not a secret, and don't make it a secretive conversation. It can be private that you choose to keep in your family, but talk about money with your children, no matter how old they are. Take the time to, like, okay, it might not be age appropriate for a 5-year-old to be talking about stocks and investments and like saving for an emergency fund, but talking to your 16-year-old, it could be important for them to start having a conversation around, what does it mean to save? Why do I work and then taxes come out? Having those conversations. So financial education is going to be really important for people to just stop and understand what's going on with their money. After that, let's talk about the feelings aspect of it. And this is, like you said, the kind of internal dialogue that comes up. What are you thinking about money? Like, what are your internal money beliefs about money? For some people, it's scarcity. Hey, we're never going to have enough. Okay, how do we challenge that? How do we make sure that you have enough and teach you how to, you know, whether it is managing your money through an advisor, whether that means, yes, you do have your emergency fund, whether that means you're going to have a little extra something, something, like you said, your aunt liked to have $50,000 in her account. That sounds like something was comforting for her. Hey, I know I have enough money to do whatever might come up. Like if the furnace goes, I can pay for it in cash. It's fine. So understanding, what do you need to feel comfortable and stable and safe? Okay, now that you have that, now let's start entering into, why doesn't it feel like enough? Let's have those hard conversations around, why do you feel like you need to have more? What happened in your life that told you, hey, something's going to come up and completely derail us? And now how do we change that thought from where you were in the past to where you currently are. Because a lot of times people are living in the past and what they dealt with in the past that looks so different than their financial state currently in the present. So how do we heal from some of those financial traumas that you went through when you were growing up or when you were younger or early in adulthood? And now understand that your financial situation is different and you are stable. And sometimes it really is just the reality check and having those conversations over and over and over again to teach you, hey, there's really nothing that you could do to go spend all this money. You're not trying to buy the island. You're not trying to spend all of it, but it does mean you guys can go to dinner. Go have a nice dinner. Go have a $500 dinner. Like have a very, very nice dinner and realize, hey, oh, nothing is different. Nothing has changed. We are not in a worse off situation because we treated ourselves to something that we really both enjoyed.
I think two thoughts on that. One is if you look at years where the market corrected and parents were really struggling, there you can almost look at some of the age groups and say, oh, that was a time when people were really struggling, just like the Depression. And in those age groups where we've had market corrections and the conversation around the table is fearful about money and they can hear their parents talking about it. And so it's like, how do you separate yourself from what's happened in your family to what is really happening in your life? And the other thing I wanted to just mention to people is that having these family talks is great. We do them with all of our clients that want to do them. And one of the things we found is that often parents will think, I don't want my kids to know how much money I have. They don't need to know how much money you have, but you still can have family conversations. You can still talk about your estate planning. You can help them to understand better where they are. Because a lot of times what I find is parents, adult children are worried about their parents' financial futures. And they're also but they won't have the conversations. And I've had people come in and say, I have more than enough money. And they have no money. And I've had people come in and say, I don't have enough money. And they have more money than they could ever spend. So it's having these conversations with your parents so that hanging over their head isn't, well, I have to take care of mom. Well, I have to take care of dad. What might that look like? It's all age groups, Asia. It's all.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter.
Conversations. It does not matter.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times, like I said in the beginning, is that a lot of times we assume that somebody, because you have enough money that you don't need this kind of support because you should be okay. You should feel okay. But like you said, I've seen millionaires who feel really uncomfortable and feel like they don't have enough money and aren't going to be safe and aren't financially stable. And I've seen people who don't have as much money and they're like, no, it will be okay. And I'm like, listen, there is a place in the middle for all of us. Your emotions can shift. They're going to change. And that's okay because your life is going to change. But let's make sure that we're rooted in the reality of where you're at right now and know how to manage your money in a way that you can take care of yourself and you can put money into the places that you really value. And to the people that are like the example you gave, the one client who's like, hey, I don't want my kids to know how much money I have. I'm like, okay, but your kids are over here worrying about whether or not they need to take care of you financially. And I agree with you. You don't have to tell them. But if that person sat on my couch, I'd be like, okay, where is that coming from? Like, why don't you want to tell your kids how much money you have? Because that's also rooted in something else that does need to be untangled too. You don't have to, right? Like I'm not here to say, do this or do that. That's not what my goal is, but my goal is to make sure you feel better. And if you feel like you can't trust your kids to let them know how much money you have, then there's something else going on there for you that is it's holding you back. So let's kind of unpack those things. And it's such a simple example of how we may be holding on to things from our past and our histories without realizing it's impacting what we want to do in the future.
Asia, are you taking new clients?
I am, yes. I don't have a ton of space, but I do have some space for new clients. So I do see individuals and I see couples too.
And do you do it on Zoom for people who aren't in California? Yeah. How can people reach out to you?
Sure. So you can find me at my website, which is AsiaEvansCounseling.com, Asia, A-J-A, Evans, E-V-A-N-S, counseling.com. Shoot me an email. I'm also on, social media floating around. So you can find me there on Instagram at Asia E-Therapy.
Okay, that sounds great. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. You can go to ellenbecker.com if you'd like more information. If you're struggling with your finances, we would love to have you call us, of course, and just take a look at our website. You'll get to know us pretty well. My guest today is Asia Evans, and she is a financial therapist. She wrote a great book, Feel Good Finance, and it's sort of entangling your relationship with money for better mental, emotional, and financial well-being. And if you've been listening to us, you can tell that she is easy to talk to. And I think that just like a financial advisor, looking for a therapist to work with, they have to be someone who listens well, someone who is going to really help you to understand some of the things that you're feeling and why. And the more transparent you can be, the better it is. And that's the same way with a financial advisor. One of the things that I'm curious about is that, and I find myself in the same boat all the time, is Christmas, the holidays. And I know that one of the things that you talked about is why avoiding money talk is ruining your mood and your financial well-being. And that's during the holidays. And the reason I'm saying that is I always have this list of things that I'm going to buy. And I like to give the kids a little bit of money, but then I'm always wanting to buy more. I mean, it always seems like it's hard to, I think, you know, and I'm very blessed. I can do that. And it's always like the more you have, the more difficult it is to monitor your finances and to not want to do too much or give too much. Because I know that mentally, I know that you need to have limits and you need to do that. But my heart goes, oh, that's so cute. Wouldn't my great-granddaughter love that? Or, and then all of a sudden you're into this thing, oh my God, I got to keep everything equal. I bought one more here. Now I got to buy more there. What about that crazy holiday talk?
Yeah, so I would say there's so much going on there. So especially if you are in a financial position to enjoy giving to somebody else, that is a beautiful place to be. And it's fun, right? Like when you see the cute gift, you're like, oh, that reminds me of so-and-so. They would really love that. I'm going to get that for them. But it's very quick to forget that you may have bought 10 other things before that one item for them. So it's a snowball effect, right? So gift giving is amazing. It's a beautiful feeling to have. And it's lovely to be able to do that for people. The second thing that I will say, it's very easy to always find something else. There's always going to be more stuff, right? Like we are getting marketing and different ads from all over the place now. So there's always going to be more. There's always going to be something else. So you're like, oh my goodness, this person would love this. This is perfect for them. So you could shop until you drop because there's always going to be something else for them. Like it's amazing, but it also, it's a blessing and a curse, as you can imagine, right? Especially if you're trying to keep to a certain limit or keep it fair, you can find yourself spending hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on your family members because you're like, oh, and this thing, and this thing, and this thing. But what I want to ground you in is it is so amazing that you're thinking about your relatives. It's so amazing that you love them, but just remembering too that they know you love them. They want to spend time with you. Being in your presence is really what it's about. Gift giving is so, so amazing and it's great. But when you find yourself kind of getting a little carried away or continuously seeing the different things or scrolling and like, ah, this person needs that. That is because you love them. Tell them you love them. You don't need to only show your love through the gifts. You can do some of that, but also just spending the time grounding yourself in, oh, I want to buy them all these things. I want to get them these things because I love them so much. And that is a beautiful sentiment, but it doesn't always have to show up that way. It can show up with, you know what? I think I just want to see them and have dinner with them. Or let's make sure that we're going to have cute matching PJs so that we can watch this holiday movie together as a family, as a unit, and do that. A lot of times our gift giving and getting excited is wrapped up in the festivities of everything, as yes, well as how much you love your family, which is all beautiful, but you go spend time with them.
You know, it's so fun because my granddaughter, Taylor, just recently said to me, you know, Nada, what I'd really like that if each one of the holidays this year, you would do a traditional holiday dinner. So we did it for Thanksgiving. And she said, and I want to come over and make it with you so I can learn how to cook it.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, she said it to me. First of all, I went out and did all the shopping for it. It was like, whoa, this is really, food has gotten very expensive. And then, and everybody always brought something, but we did it. And she came over and she peeled the potatoes and she made the mashed potatoes from scratch and she made the stuffing and did the turkey and made an apple crisp and two pumpkin pies. And we had a ball. And yeah. You know what? That was the best present for me. And just her asking me to do that. So I thought, I'm going to see if any of the other kids want to learn how to make soup or want to do things, because those are the things that last forever. It's yes. not the and gift that we buy.
No. And what you're talking about is also like generational culture of your family. Hey, I love how grandma makes this. And have you passed down that information without having the conversation, without having the moment, without being like, oh no, I know how to make the apple crisp because we did it. Do you remember that holiday season where we sat together and we crumpled up all the butter together and we did it? Like those are, it's part of the legacy that we forget in the season. Like that's the kind of information people want to remember and take with them. Oh, this is my grandmother's recipe for pumpkin pie and I make it, or my aunt's recipe or my mom's and this is what I do. Or I really love how my dad would XYZ with the turkey, whatever they're doing, right? But all of that little nuance that's so special and tradition in your family does get lost if we don't have those moments of sharing it and passing it down to the younger generation. So that is a perfect example of how sweet is this? Our tradition is here and they're learning and that will stay with them forever. That's amazing.
I think there's one other thing, and I wanted to speak to married couples, and you did touch on it before, but understanding a little bit clearer the dangers of not managing your money yourself and not really understanding it. And that can be, I mean, if I only could tell you how many women, particularly husbands, have passed away and they've said, I don't know anything. And he always tried to teach me, but I didn't want to know. But it does go where women manage the money and husbands bring home the paycheck. So that is a really big, important thing, I think. And we just have a few minutes left.
Yeah, so super important to talk about. And I think I'm glad that you brought up specifically that you're dealing with women, because just life expectancy wise, women do outlive men, I think, by about 5 years on average. Like, so typically we are going to outlive male spouses. So how do you make sure that you understand where the money is, how to manage it, so that if that does happen, you know, eventually, hopefully much, much later in life, that you know what to do with your money. Nobody wants to be scrambling around while also trying to plan services and rally the family and get support and thinking about how your life is going to change and transition. And also being like, I don't know where any of the money is and I don't have any access to it. So having those conversations about estate planning, about having a active will, like so, so important. We don't want to think about what's going to happen when we'll pass away, but we will eventually pass away, and making sure that you understand what the accounts are, where they are, and how to access the money is going to be so important, because I don't also want people to be destitute or without the money because they had no idea what was going on too.
Well, and people need to become educated and take responsibility. I cannot tell you how many times I've worked with a client and they've co-signed on something for one of their kids and their kids have gone bankrupt or whatnot, or they haven't paid and don't pay them back. There's a lot of very good ways that you can lend money to your children and teach them the beauty of having someone to depend on to help them. But if you're going to co-sign, you better know what you're co-signing and what the downside is, because the downside is it ruins your credit.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants the two of you like having a rough time, right? When you were trying to help your kid. So it is true that you have to put your oxygen mask on first and make sure that you're okay and make sure that you're safe and sound and stable, because you cannot help them if you are not. So
we have just a few minutes left here. Can you end up the show for us with some signs that you're living a lifestyle you can't afford so people can see themselves in this conversation?
Absolutely. So if you find yourself consistently using your credit cards on a very regular basis and you're not able to pay down the whole fee, At the end of the month or at the end of the week, whatnot, and you're just kind of racking up the balance, that might be a sign that you're living over your means. If you find yourself living paycheck to paycheck and feeling like there's not enough money, there are two signs for this. So it's either, you know, you're living above your means or you're not making enough money. And either way, we can only cut so much out of our budgets. We can only cut so much. There are things that we all need. We all need to eat, right? We all need to make sure that we have food and shelter. And if you're not making enough money to cover that, then it might be time to have some harder conversations about, do we need to move and how do we make more income? So those two are the top two that I would say. And if you find yourself just consistently feeling uncomfortable about your money, feeling like you don't have enough, feeling like your account never gets to a place, you don't have an emergency fund, you couldn't handle if you had, you know, a flat tire or if something happened with your furnace at home, if you don't have enough money to make sure that you'll be okay through one of those kinds of scenarios, that might be a sign that something needs to change as well.
One of the things that I often will talk to my clients about too, the difference of becoming so comfortable with your money that when your children want something, you to buy them something, I often hear them say, we can't afford that. When in truth, the kids can look around and see that they can afford it. But being able to say it isn't a choice that we make.
Right. Because it's not a priority. They're
really understanding what the message is to your children when you say, I can't afford it, when they see you buying and doing things all around it.
And that also like seeps in. They will assume that we can't afford anything because this is what I kept hearing. So what I say to my kids, and I have young kids, I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. When we go to the store and they understand we can just buy things. Now my daughter's like, do we have a package? We can just buy it. And I was like, no, we cannot. I was like, that's not a priority for us right now. This is a priority of what we're doing. Anytime we come to the store, we could buy it, but it doesn't mean that we're going to buy it every single time. We have other priorities that are more important than purchasing this right now. And there might be another time when we get it.
You know, I just want to mention, I'm going to put a plug in for another book, believe it or not. I hope you don't mind. Yep. It's the No Cash Allowance, and it's a practical guide for teaching your children how to manage money. And it's a great little book that you can get online. I've interviewed Lynn Finch several times because the problem is we don't deal in cash anymore. Everything is credit cards. And how do you teach your children? So it's a great compliment to actually all the things that you've been talking about. My guest today is Asia Evans, and she's a financial therapist, very easy to talk to. Really, you know, these things are simple, but when we're dealing with emotions around it, they aren't simple to do. I always think I have this little plaque in my shower. It says, live by what you trust and not what you fear. And it works great until I'm in fear.
Right. It's so true. They're simple, but they're not easy, right?
They're not easy.
It's a simple understanding, but it's not easy to just do. It's very hard.
Yes, it is. And so Feel Good Finance, you can buy it. It's a great Christmas gift. And I just recommend it highly. Asia, thank you so much for being a guest today. I hope that we'll get you back again. And as always, I hope that I've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen. Have a really great day. Thank you. Bye-bye.